This is the Drive and Dish podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
It seems like the Heat this year, with the way that they're built, they have a lot to prove, and I think that they could potentially be the 2 seed in the East.
Kevin Rayfuse.
It's October 28th. The Spurs play the Thunder. And so you got Lamar Saldridge making his debut with San Antonio. You've got Kevin Durant, first game back, coming off foot surgery. You know, we know these teams have battled before, twice in the Western Conference Finals.
Justin Cousart.
You got to get somebody around Davis. Maybe some guards that can get on the ball, so not Lance Stevens.
Let's go.
So I know I'm pleased by this news because I don't do this every morning. Justin is really excited by this news.
Because this could have killed me.
Tim, you seem somewhere kind of in the middle.
No, I have always thought that making your bed was the biggest waste of time ever.
Did your parents like hate it when you didn't make your bed? Like, my mom would be on me if I didn't make my bed. I'd come back from school, she'd be like, you know what you didn't do before you left for school? Like, something like, you would have thought I killed the damn dog.
Right.
Like, it was so bad. So, but yeah, no, there's a study that came out by an article called Why You Should Never Make Your Bed. It actually came out in 2005, but, you know, people care about it now.
We're just discovering it now. Yes, there's no reason to make your bed because every night you just mess it up anyway.
And honestly, I like it when the covers are kind of like colder in certain spots. You know, when like the covers are crinkled up, they're warmer in some spots and it's cold. And, you know.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. When you go to a hotel and you sleep in a hotel, before you get into bed, do you take out the bottom so your feet aren't scrunched up? You know, like untuck the bed before you get
in? Untuck everything. I like to be like a burrito. Like, I like to wrap.
Yeah. So then what's the point of making your bed?
Right.
To look nice. It looks nice.
But if for who? No one goes in my room but me.
Right. That's the thing. Unless you have company coming over, there's no point.
I just close my door if I have company
coming
over.
That's also true.
Like a certain kind of company. You know, like if you guys are coming to my house, you aren't gonna look in my room anyway.
But to be fair, if I'm like when I like brought my girlfriend back.
Yeah.
Anytime I go out, it would be like, okay, I'm gonna make my bed.
Oh yeah,
I only make it when we come back.
Women or family. That's it. It's the only time I make it.
Yeah,
I don't do it for either.
Well, apparently, and this is the science behind it, an average bed has up to 1.5 million dust mites living in it. Obviously, you can't see them. They feed off your dead skin, which is even more nasty. But apparently, when you make your bed, it like traps them and the allergens and stuff from all of it. Apparently, if you inhale that, it can make your allergies worse and or cause an asthma attack. And I have asthma, so I saved myself. I could have died.
Mm-hmm. Among other problems you have.
I have many problems. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on.
Jaundice?
Jaundice?
Yeah.
I don't have jaundice.
Were you on the Oregon Trail?
You mean tinnitus?
Yeah.
Okay, jaundice and tinnitus are completely different things. Tinnitus is, that's just something I deal with. That's because I played the drums as a kid.
Mm.
So, you know, and, you know, dyslexia and apparently ADD, but I don't really believe in that.
No, it's not really noticeable.
Yeah. I hate you.
This is the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Welcome. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie, but it sure does talk a lot.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Cousart.
Let me buy you a drink because I'd hate for you to have to pay. Donald Trump's probably his favorite pickup line.
Okay, so... So basically, if you follow Justin on Twitter, Justin C on the air at Twitter, he always comes up with these original jokes that I find absolutely hilarious.
Nobody else does. Everybody that all of my friends that follow me from Flyther, they're like, dude, you are such a loser. And I'm like, these are hilarious. This is gold I'm rolling out.
No, they're really funny jokes. So we were talking and he decided instead of doing the giggity for the intro on the midweeks, he would now read one of his original jokes. And I think it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
You get it to pay because of Donald Trump's hair?
I get it. Did you see the press conference where he had a woman pull on his hair to prove that it wasn't a toupee?
I did.
That's so ridiculous. Yeah. And this man is leading every GOP poll right now.
And we're talking about him for some reason anyway.
So we got a review this week. This one is from America. It's called August Content Creation. It's a 5-star review by Nick Hill 227. He says, thank you guys for continuing to make podcasts. I love some of the huge ones out there, but like you said, no one is making podcasts about basketball in August. Just discovered you, and I'm loving it. Looking forward to something to occupy me while I deal with LA traffic. Nick.
Ugh. I'll tell you, I was in LA for a week, and that traffic, man, that is legit.
It's still not as bad as Atlanta, but it is really, really bad.
That's one thing we're pretty blessed with in Jacksonville, is we don't really have that bad of traffic.
Although apparently this week Tim would argue that we do, because I know some of his reports coming in this week were pretty awful.
Dude, like Monday, and I was talking to my mother, and it took her 4 hours to get to work on Monday morning. 4 hours. It was hands down the worst. Well, it was one of the top like three worst traffic days I've ever had in Jacksonville. But none of that matters. Anyway, thank you so much for the review, for leaving on iTunes. And again, we read these reviews every week, not because we're narcissistic, but they really do help us move up the ranks and everything on the iTunes. And super easy. If you have your iPhone open and you're on your podcast app, there's a little thing when you search Drive and Dish that it says review. It's as easy as sending someone a text message. If it's good or funny, we promise we'll read it on the show.
And if you've left us a review to this point, we have seen it. We will read it. You guys have just been awesome, and so we're a little backed up.
And here's a little tip. If you're too busy to leave a review, go to Safari. Type in good reviews to leave on iTunes. Find the first one, copy it, go into ours, leave a review, and just paste it and hit post.
That's no fun.
That's fine with me. But make sure it's a 5-star, so, yeah. You know, that's fine with me. I don't care. I'm going to look up which one that is and see how many we get now.
That's going to be the most cliche thing of all time.
I'm totally fine with it.
Well, why don't we get some news?
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, Andrew Wiggins called his loss with the Canadian team the worst of his career. It is expected that there will be a multi-team D-League expansion next season. The Bucks have extended the contract of their GM, John Hammond. It's been reported that the Pelicans are going to sign Chris Douglas Roberts. The Pistons said they don't expect Brandon Jennings back until December. And lastly in your news, Doc Rivers has denied any rift with the Clippers president of business operations. And that's your news for this week.
Something. And joining us on the line now is Greg Esposito. You can follow him at Espo on Twitter. He is the post-game radio host for the Phoenix Suns and senior digital manager. He's also the host of Rise, the Phoenix Suns official podcast, and according to his Twitter bio, all-around tolerable guy and fine purveyor of snark. Greg, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
I'm glad you got everything in there, because I was really worried people would have no clue who I was or what I was about. So glad you jammed about 15 things in that introduction.
Well, hey, we had to make sure that all around tolerable guy is the most important thing. So, you know, we made sure we got that in there. But let's get right down to business. The team just started voluntary workouts, season coming up right around the corner, preseason just a few weeks away. What's the atmosphere like around the organization right now?
A lot of excitement right now. A lot of the guys have been in for a large amount of the last month. I believe it was 10 of the guys that are on contract have been in for since the middle of August, pretty much. In terms of Eric Bledsoe, he's been here all summer. He has really embraced his role as one of the leaders on this team. He is excited for the season to get going, and really just a lot of interest going into this season.
When the offseason happened, one of the biggest moves of the offseason for the Phoenix Suns, I think, hands down, was the signing of Tyson Chandler. And does that signify any lack of trust in Alex Lynn at all? Or are the Suns looking for Tyson Chandler in more of a veteran leadership and developmental role with Alex Lynn?
I think it really comes down to they have an immense belief in Alex Lynn, and they wanted to get a guy in here that could continue to help his growth, because Alex getting thrusted into that starting center position last year was probably a little bit early for him. He's still very young. He's 21. He's a guy that is still, you know, learning the game. Had started it at kind of an older age, and really is still trying to figure out how to fine-tune those skills. He showed a lot of great things last year, a lot of ability as a rim protector. He's still working on his offensive game, but I think this is, as weird as it may sound, a vote of confidence in Alex Lynn, because they're bringing in a guy in Tyson Chandler who Alex has an immense amount of respect for and who he really wants to learn from. So I think Tyson comes in and will really help teach Alex the finer points of being a big-time starting center in this league. And really, if you look at it, Alex Lynn, I believe, played between 22 and 24 minutes a game last year as the starter. So I think he's going to see the same amount of minutes this year, because Tyson has had some injury history and his past, and I think they're going to pretty much evenly split those minutes throughout a game. So you're probably going to see 22 to 24 minutes a game again out of Alex Len, and you'll see him take that next step. And I was talking with Matt Peterson, the Suns.com beat writer in our office yesterday, and we were commenting on how Alex Len probably now becomes the best backup center in the NBA, and he'll have a chance to really feast on a lot of these second-string guys that he's going to come in and play against. You're going to see that next step from Alex Len this season. I think a big part of that will be the tutelage of one Tyson Chandler.
So Alex Len has a sneaky good jump shot, and can we expect to see Tyson Chandler and Alex Len share minutes together at the 4 and 5 position at all?
I don't think you'll see them on the floor at the same time, at least not as of right now. It doesn't seem like it's the plan, especially when Alex is really the only other center on the roster other than Tyson Chandler as it stands right now. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of them on the floor, but you're right in the fact that Alex Len does have a sneaky good jump shot, and I think you'll see him start to use that a lot more this season. One thing he actually was working on prior to summer league is he has a pretty efficient corner three-point shot, which you wouldn't think from a 7-1 guy, and it's not the ideal shot you want to take, but it shows that he can stretch the floor, and I think you'll start to see him get more comfortable with that jumper and kind of inch out a little bit further, and it'll add a nice compliment to what Tyson Chandler will do when he's in the game. He's more of, you know, that pick-and-roll kind of guy. He'll get most of his baskets at the rim, but then you'll bring in Alex Len and give that defense a little different feel than they're going against with Tyson. So I think it'll be a really nice pairing. I just don't think you'll likely see them on the floor at the same time.
I was hoping to see a few more three-point shots from Alex Len during summer league, but unfortunately I think he didn't shoot as much from the three-point line as I was hoping. Bring it to another player that is he's got to just be considered a fan favorite at this point. That's TJ Warren. He's coming in after a really impressive summer league performance. He played limited minutes in his rookie season behind PJ Tucker on the depth chart. This coming season, unless we see Weems spend a lot of time at the three, what can we expect from him this season? Because last season, after the All-Star break, I mean, TJ Warren was just tearing it up on the floor. And in my opinion, he was one of the only Suns players that was really cutting to the basket. And it seems like he could be used a lot more this coming year.
Yeah, war machine, Tony Buckets, whatever you call him, the guy can score at will. And he is really becoming a fan favorite. He did show what he could do in the second half of last season at the NBA level. He's been impressive in both summer leagues, and he is just one of those instinctual players that knows where to be, how to get there, and it's funny because off the court, he's one of the most quiet human beings I've ever met, but when he's on the court, he wreaks havoc because the defense, he just can find the soft spot in the defense and then has a crazy repertoire of ways to score, floaters, jumpers, getting to the rim. He has a lot of ability. I think you'll see his time increase. You'll see him get playing time. Coach Hornacek really started to trust him in that second half of the season, and I think he's going to be one of those diamonds in the rough, one of those draft picks you look back and you go, you know, a handful of teams really blew it not taking this guy earlier because he's going to be able to score the basketball. Now, defensive end has been the question. He's worked really hard on that. At summer league, he showed that he has a willingness to work hard on that end and kind of be tenacious at it. And still, at times, he was out of position, but I think you'll see an improvement there as well, and that'll be the key to how many minutes he plays, because as long as he's not a liability on the defensive end, I think you'll see him play a significant role on this team this year.
Yeah, one of the One of the critiques of his game is that he doesn't have a great three-point shot. And some people think that his game won't translate to the NBA because of that, especially with the new pace and space and, you know, all that crap that everyone always talks about. But I think that anyone who thinks that has never seen DeMar DeRozan light it up for the Raptors. What does Warren think about some of the criticisms of his game?
Well, I think he shows it on the court. He's working on a three-point shot, but, you know, the pace and space is great, but you still need guys that can instinctually score, that can get to the rim, can score in traffic, and that's one of the big things that he can do. He's not just a mid-range jump shooter, which a lot of people will confuse that. He's a guy that gets to the basket really well. He's a guy that scores in that paint, and you still need that in this game. That's a very big key to the way the game's kind of changing, even in this analytics-driven style of play now. And as he progresses on that three-point shot, he's really going to become dynamic. Can he hit those mid-range jumpers? Sure. Will he spend a lot of time doing that? Probably not. I think you're going to see him cut to the basket, hit those floaters, get in, score baskets, get to the free throw line. And if a three-point game comes at some point, it's a bonus. The guys that can score instinctually in this game will never go extinct. No matter how they find a way to score, there'll always be a premium on those guys, no matter how much the game changes based on the analytical approach to it. And if you look at the Suns front office, there is a heavy emphasis on the analytics, and they still took a guy like T.J. Warren. So that should speak volumes to what his game really means in the new NBA.
I think his game's absolutely dynamic, and the way that he's able to score really confuses defenses, and I just think that doesn't necessarily translate to analytics, but it translates to winning games. Exit interviews last season seemed to have players calling for more veteran leadership in the locker room, and I guess I'm just wondering how the Suns have addressed that this summer during the offseason.
Well, I am entering my fifth season, so I will take more of a leadership role this year. Just kidding. But Tyson Chandler is really how they addressed that this year. You had a guy like Ronnie Price as well in the mix that'll be kind of a veteran voice in that backcourt. Probably won't play a lot of minutes, but he's a guy that's a good locker room guy. Tyson Chandler's the key, though, is the way he'll play on the court, but also the way he'll carry himself in the locker room. He'll kind of be that anchor. But then, as weird as it sounds, at 23, I think Brandon Knight's going to be a very big part of the leadership in the locker room and on the court as well, because he's a guy that when you interact with him, you see his age on paper and you think, okay, young guy. When you interact with him, you say, oh, old soul, this is a guy that carries himself in a way that a 10-year veteran might. So I think he'll play a big part on it. Eric Bledsoe has he'll never be the real vocal guy per se, but he'll be the guy that is now trying to do the little things to lead by example, like being here all summer, working with the training staff, working on his game. There's probably still room for growth in terms of leadership on this team, but it's much further than it was last year, and you kind of hope guys like P.J. Tucker reestablish themselves in the locker room. He had some issues last year, but he's risen above that and hoping that he'll become a large part of it. And the dynamic likely will shift a lot just based on the Tyson Chandler signing.
You mentioned Brandon Knight and the Suns signing him to a long-term deal in the offseason, putting a lot of money into a young player. And we know that last year he was limited a bit by injuries, but the Suns clearly see the potential. What did they see specifically in Brandon Knight that made the organization want to treat him as a long-term piece going forward?
A smart floor general. Within a few days of being in Phoenix, he was basically running the offense, helping his teammates know where they needed to be on the floor, which sounds a little odd for a guy that just came in, but he is really, really intelligent in terms of running an offense. I think that was a big key to wanting to keep him in the fold. He's a guy that when you're around, you can just sense that he knows how to play this game the right way and how to do things the right way. I don't think Suns fans got the chance to really see the full Brandon Knight either. He was a little tentative when he got here, just due to, anybody would be that way, having to move across country, change jobs, get used to a new place. He was a little tentative prior to the injury. Then the injury obviously kept him out, but I think his shooting is another reason that they decided to invest in him long-term, because he's a very good shooter. I think he'll add that element to the offense. He's one of those guys that can space the floor and hit from long distance. I think that's a huge key. But when you look at these contracts, you say it's a big contract. You look at Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight and the numbers that they've gotten over the last two seasons. I think next year, those numbers are going to look like bargains when the cap explodes and there's all this money that everybody's throwing around. There's a chance those look like great value contracts rather than really tying all this money into your backcourt, which you hear as a critique of this team. The flexibility that cap increase of next year and then the years after that really are going to make those deals look good, because these are guys, high value, high potential in them. And I know that's a bad word sometimes for the potential word, but these guys have a very great chance of being a truly dynamic backcourt for years to come. And, Eric Bledsoe, you look at his stats last year, he got a hard time from the fan base at times and somewhat nationally just because of kind of the way things went last season from a team perspective. But if you look at his individual statistics, he was doing things that the Suns haven't seen since Jason Kidd was a part of their staff, and some of the averages he had. He had a very dynamic season. So I think it was unfair to characterize some of what he did last season as not productive in some ways some people do. So when you look at those two guys, their ability, the room for growth, and the fact that they're going to get a chance to grow together. I mean, they're looking at a 23-year-old and a 25-year-old with all that potential. There's a chance they become one of the best backcourts in the game over the next 3 to 4 years, and that's what you're investing in, is the chance to have two guys locked up long-term in going into the primes of their career rather than older guys who may not be in that position and may have kind of reached the peak of their potential.
And that's actually what I was about to ask you. I was about to say, what can Suns fans really expect between the Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight duo? Like, what's a reasonable expectation? I know you said it's going to be about 3-4 years till they're like really in their prime, but what's a reasonable expectation? What are some numbers that are reasonable to expect from them next year?
I don't know what necessarily average-wise would be reasonable to expect. I'd be completely guessing, and I failed math class in high school, so it's probably not fair for me to do that. I'll leave that to the analytic gurus online and then the pseudo GMs online that think they know that stuff. But I think you can expect Eric to kind of be that guy that's going to drive the bucket, that he do those things that we've seen him do over the last few years, and really you'll be the muscle in it, and you're going to see Brandon be that guy that stretches the floor, that is the assist guy more, and have them just really have this interesting dynamic where, either side of the floor, you're going to have a guy that can handle the ball, so when you swing the ball, it's going to open things up. You're going to see on the fast break, in an ideal world for Coach Hornacek, it doesn't matter. Either of these guys bring up the ball, and now that you've got these two dynamic guards, both of which can play point guard, you're likely never going to have you're never going to have a moment where you don't have both guys or one of the two guys on the floor. So now you've made it even tougher on defenses, because now you have a borderline all-star guard on the floor for pretty much all of the 48 minutes of a game you're going to play. So it puts a lot of pressure on the opposing defenses as well. I think this team will look a lot more like that team that surprised the league 2 years ago than the team you saw last year. And a lot of people are down on the Suns. I get it. And everybody can take what I'm saying with a grain of salt based on where my paycheck comes from. But honestly, and I admit that, people will say things, but they don't pay me for my opinion. They pay me for the work I produce, but my opinion is they don't pay me for. So this is a genuine thing for me. I think that they will be much more like that dynamic team that we saw 2 years ago than the iteration last year. A lot of drama last year, but when you look at the way this is structured and the younger in that backcourt now, I think you're going to see that dynamic play out very, very well this year for the Suns.
So speaking of last year, Espo, I was watching the top 10 plays of last season on YouTube earlier today. And one of the plays that made, I think it was maybe the third one, was you had Gerald Green, where he got around a defender, he passed it to himself off the backcourt and then dunked the ball. And it was, I remember watching that game and just how incredible it was at the moment. Unfortunately, the Suns didn't re-sign Gerald. But the good part of that is it's going to open up minutes for Archie Goodwin and Devin Booker. And Archie, he's an interesting guy because he's going into his third year right now. I believe he was the youngest player in his draft when he was drafted. And I'm just, what part of his game has he been working on during the offseason? I know there was a, he's a bit turnover prone. He was also put into situations that maybe weren't ideal for him last year. He probably, in my opinion, shouldn't be running the point. He has kind of a lack of outside shooting, but what has Archie been working on this year?
Well, Archie's continually working on shooting with Coach Jeff Hornacek. But the biggest thing for Archie is he's still super young. He just turned, I believe, just turned 21. I could be wrong. He may have been just 20, actually. And he's immensely young, so there's a lot of time for him to grow into his game. There's a lot of raw athletic talent with Archie that he can grow into. There's with anybody, when they come in that young, there's maturing that you have to do, that you have to learn about the game and how to be a professional and just what it means to be on an NBA court. So I think those things will come for him. And I don't know that is, I don't know how many minutes he'll get with the absence of Gerald Green. I'm not sure that he's the guy that becomes the benefactor of that. I'm not even sure that Devin Booker is. These are guys that it's going to take time still for both of them to catch up to the speed of the NBA game. I mean, Devin's 18. He's the same age Archie came in. The difference is Devin is a pure shooter. So he may see the floor just based on the fact that he can shoot in an immensely impressive way. We saw it at Summer League. He dropped 31 in a game, and it was because he found his rhythm beyond the arc. So he may be a guy that, you know, on nights when the offense is kind of stagnant and you need a shooter, he may get the opportunity to go out there and maybe shoot the Suns out of a slump at times, which was kind of the rule at times Gerald Green would play. Now, I think Devin's shot selection will probably be, you know, slightly better than
better.
Gerald. Gerald was a volume shooter, so when he did that, that was the way he did it. Devin's a little more selective on when he takes that shot. So, but the guy that probably wind up being the first guard off the bench and kind of the guy that takes a lot of that Gerald Green role is Sonny Weems. And I think he's a guy that will surprise. He's been fantastic in Europe. He was pretty solid when he got his opportunity in Toronto back the year before the lockout. So I think he's going to surprise. He's a guy, obviously, since he played in Russia last year and Lithuania prior to that, that really isn't on people's radars. There's not a lot of people that go, oh, yeah, Sonny Weems. I spent all that time watching the Russian league last year, so I'm real familiar with his game. But he's an athletic guy. He won dunk contests and overseas and in college. So he's a guy that can do that. But the really impressive thing that he's done is in Toronto, he shot 29% from three-point land. Last year in EuroLeague, shot 40% and really improved that shot. And he takes great pride in that. I think he's going to be the beneficiary of it. And ironically, he has a kind of interesting story similar to Gerald. Gerald was missing the finger, missing his ring finger on one of his hands, and it was Sonny. He grew up with cleft feet. They didn't even think he could walk. He was telling me in an interview on Suns.com and the app that he actually was in the Forrest Gump-type leg braces when he was a kid. So that's how serious his ailment was as a child. He overcame it, and he's back in the NBA. And I don't think I've met a guy more proud of the hard work he put in and the fact that he's getting an opportunity to come back into the association this year. He's going to be a real benefactor, and I think he'll probably be the Gerald Green replacement that everybody's wondering about.
Yeah, Sonny Weems is really interesting. It seemed like really Spursian move that the Suns pulled off right there, going and getting somebody that was just, you know, he's playing overseas, but he's a great player. He's a great shooter. He's under the radar for a lot of casual NBA fans and, you know, probably a lot of teams for that matter, too. So you just posted an interview that you did with Sonny Weems on your Rise podcast. You said it's on Suns.com as well?
Yeah, I had a chance to sit down with him for, I guess it was about 30 minutes last week, and really talked about his childhood, like I mentioned. He talked about his experience in Europe. He tells a great story about what it's like to be an American-born player in Europe and involves somebody stealing some very odd things from his apartment. I won't spoil the story. You'll want to hear it on the podcast there on Suns.com, but he is... I'm not supposed to have favorites. That's what we're told, Dan, that we're not supposed to be biased. We're not supposed to have favorites, but I'm going to break those rules. Sonny Weems, in one interview, became one of my favorite Suns on this roster because he's interesting. He's engaging. He's a guy that you just want to root for based on his story and what it took for him to get back into the NBA. And you kind of mentioned it was a Spursian move. Well, ironically enough, he actually... was that Spurs actually showed some interest in him too. So it's kind of one of those under-the-radar moves that good teams make. And it makes a difference between, being a 39-win team and being a 48-win team. That kind of difference is the little move. It's not the big splash. Everybody always thinks it's the big splash. You know, those are the things that take you from good to great. But the things that put you in a position to take that step to great are moves like signing a Sonny Weems. You've got to build that foundation of solid guys that know their role, that are willing to do the little things to make your team a winner. And that's what Sonny Weems is. And he's really going to impress Suns fans and I think NBA fans this season if he gets his opportunity.
Well, so I guess one other question I had is, you know, the Suns are kind of in a weird division where, you know, you've got the Warriors who are, you know, top dog, and then you've got the Lakers who a few years ago we would be saying they're top dog, but now they're kind of hovering towards the bottom. What can we expect from the Suns as a whole in kind of where they're going to place throughout the league?
I think they're probably going to be very similar to where they've been the last 2 years. They're going to be fighting for that seventh or eighth spot in the Western Conference, and I hope this is the year that they break through. I'm not going to guarantee anything, but I think they've learned the lessons of the last 2 years. They've got to be the surprise team. Last year, they wound up as a disappointment, and that's what it was. Last year was a disappointing season based on expectations, because in 2 years ago, they were ahead of schedule. Nobody expected, including the front office, expected that team to succeed the way it did. They became a victim of expectations last year because you win 48 games and all of a sudden everybody thinks, oh, well, now here we go. It's the next big step that we're going to take this year. It's going to be unbelievable, 55 wins. You wouldn't believe some of the fan expectations that they saw. You know, they because of injuries and internal issues, They only won 39 last year, and all of a sudden they're a disappointment. They learned the lessons from those two seasons. Roster balance was a big thing that general manager Ryan McDonough talked about needing, and talked about how that was a mistake on his part that the team lacked true roster balance last year. He rectified it this offseason. Veteran leadership, we talked about that earlier. They rectified that. The front office looked at it and said, we need guys like Tyson Chandler in here. They looked at guys that may have reached their ceiling in terms of potential and moved on and got younger guys who have a higher ceiling who can play at a high level now. This year, I feel, could be that step where they get into that eighth spot, that they've learned enough where they can make those moves. Eric Bledsoe's dedication this summer has been truly impressive. I think he's ready to take another step in his career and make that step from potential borderline all-star to maybe getting in that game and really being a leader on the court. I have higher expectations this year than I did last year personally, just based on the growth from inside the organization.
Well, I know that for a lot of Suns fans, they just look at wins and losses, but the Suns last year, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that they led the league in games lost within 5 points. So they didn't win as many games, but there were also just so many games. Yeah, that one that sticks out in my mind was the Blake Griffin step back three being guarded by PJ Tucker, where it was just like the Suns couldn't win, but they were in those close games, and they were so close. They're just, the thing about basketball is a lot of that has to do with lucky bounces. And I know, for one, being a huge Suns fan myself, I'm more than excited for the season. A lot of great talent's been added. You have John Luer, who we didn't have a chance to talk about. Mirza Teletovic has been added. Tyson Chandler, we spoke about. You have the development of some of the younger guys. They just made a great draft pick in Booker. But talking about your podcast, how can people find it? Why should they subscribe?
Well, they should subscribe because obviously they heard I'm immensely entertaining over the last 15, 20 minutes or so here. But no. Really, we get a chance to get access to really learn what these guys are all about. Sonny Weems was gracious enough to sit down with me for, like I mentioned, 30 minutes. We get access like that to a lot of our guys. Also, myself and my co-host on the post-game show, John Bloom, we do a podcast on the Rise Podcast Network that is called The Fodcast, where we just kind of have fun with Sun topics. We give perspective on what's going on. We kind of look at the global perspective of what's going on with the Phoenix Suns. If you go on iTunes, you subscribe to Rise Suns Network, you can actually get all the audio from our local radio affiliate as well. When they do an interview, we put it on there. So you kind of get a 360-degree view of what it's like to be inside the organization and get all the info that you want as a fan. So I think that's the self-serving reason why you should subscribe via iTunes or download the Suns mobile app on the Android marketplace or the iTunes store, because both of those places, in the app, you can get all that audio and all the video that we produce as well on the Rise Network. So I think as a Suns fan, it's a must because it keeps me employed.
And again, we want to thank Greg Esposito for coming on. Make sure you follow him at Espo on Twitter. Again, a post-game radio host of the Phoenix Suns and senior digital manager. Greg, thank you for your time.
Of course, guys. Anytime, except for when I'm busy.
So thanks again to Greg Esposito at Espo on Twitter if you want to hit him up. And now let's switch it over. We got Griffin Connolly on the line.
You can check out his blog at driveanddishpodcast.com. Just click that blog tab. It's Griffin Connolly. Follow him on Twitter at Griffin Connolly. Griffin, what's going on, man?
Not much.
There's been a heat wave in Boston this week. It's crazy. Yo, you're actually up there now, which we'll get into what you're talking about in a sec, but it's been hotter up there than it's been down here.
Oh, yeah, dude. I don't know how I survived. We don't have air conditioning in the house I'm living in. So it's just windows open, both front and back door open. Thankfully, we didn't get robbed, but we had to have some sort of two-way draft. But it was just miserable.
So the Kings offseason, what to me seemed like the absolute most detrimental move that any team in the league could do is they let the former number two overall pick, Derek Williams, walk away in free agency.
Oh, my God.
Well, I don't know why you're laughing, Kevin. Why? What kind of impact do you think that's going to have for the Sacramento Kings?
I can't even get a read on that question. I don't know if it was sarcasm or if it was a dig at Derek Williams or what.
There's a thing with Tim. A lot of the times with Tim, you can never really tell if he's being sarcastic.
Tim has an irrational love of Derek Williams.
I'm still holding out on Derek Williams. I think the Knicks got him at a good price. That said, I don't think he was that important to the Kings. I mean, if they had been able to sign him at somewhere around where the Knicks got him for, that might have worked fine with me. But I think they were trying to keep their options open for bigger names, so they weren't able to keep enough room for Williams.
Well, that being said,
although I guess they didn't have to.
Well, that being said, is that I watched the top 10 Kings plays of last season, and Derek Williams was in two of them.
In what capacity? Was he dunking or what?
Yeah,
Derek Williams can dunk. That's something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a high flyer. I mean, coming out of the draft, he was billed as this great three-point shooting athletic guy, and he just, I don't know, he just sort of ended up being a tweener, not quite athletic enough to guard threes consistently, not good enough at NBA range to hit, knock down three-pointers on offense, just not big enough to bang with low post guys. But, I mean, it'll be interesting as the league gets small, as fours get smaller and smaller in the league, it'll be interesting to see if Derek Williams has a place and can guard some of those guys who are playing the second biggest position on the floor now. So, I mean, maybe the way the trends of the NBA will help Derek Williams personally for his career. But, yeah, I don't think his leaving the Kings is that detrimental for Sacramento. I think there's a lot of other things going on in Sacramento they need to focus on than the loss of Derek Williams.
You entertained Tim way more with that answer than I ever anticipated. It's okay to tell him that Derek Williams is just not going to be a good NBA player ever. It's okay. You can say it.
All right, I'll keep that in mind next time.
All right, so anyways, though.
Sarcastic questions.
But so, big Kings news. I guess the first thing that was interesting to watch was the ongoing drama that was DeMarcus Cousins and George Karl. You have DeMarcus Cousins tweeting snakes in the grass. You have them running into each other at a basketball showcase and them having the iciest handshake of all time. But then the Kings tweet a picture of DeMarcus Cousins with George Karl and everybody's smiling and it seems to be all good. What is your impression of this drama been? Do you think these two can have a coexisting coach-player relationship this season?
I think they can coexist as long as – I'm going to steal an idea from Tom Ziller. I think they can coexist as long as they win. Those guys are both driven to win. George Karl wants to reach that career wins. He wants to eclipse Don Nelson's mark for career wins as a coach. Boogie Cousins just wants to win. He hasn't won anything substantial since Kentucky. And even then, I'm not sure. I don't know if they won the SEC championship that year. But anyway, so yeah, I think if they get a couple wins under their belt early, then the things will be patched up pretty quickly. Another thing, you've heard how DeMarcus Cousins just doesn't forget a slight. He holds on to grudges. And that was interesting to me is because people think about that in a negative way because they attach it to DeMarcus Cousins. But you know who else holds grudges and doesn't let anyone off the hook? Is Michael Jordan. And people love that about him. So it's just interesting, if you have a guy who's a winner, who, you know, is a champion, then even, like, unredeeming qualities are championed as well. But if you have someone who hasn't really won anything of substance, like DeMarcus Cousins, then that very same quality is construed in a negative light. So it's just interesting, the give and take there.
Right, and so I guess the next... or probably one of the bigger news of the offseason was they picked up Rajon Rondo. And I feel like that could go either way. That could actually end up being really good, and he plays out of his mind because I guess it's just for a year, which I actually think the contract's more in favor of Rondo.
Well, he's got something to prove, and he can cash in if he plays well.
Yeah.
Right, so that it could work out. But my thing is, like, so they have Darren Collison. I thought that was kind of their point guard they were going to be working with. Is that bringing in Rondo showing that they don't trust him or don't believe that he can do what he's, you know, what he was doing last year?
I think it's just sort of acknowledging the fact that Darren Collison is a solid backup point guard and not much else. The Rondo thing's weird. Like you said, it's only a 1-year contract. That you sort of took the words out of my mouth, what I wanted to say. So just a brief explanation of that. It's a 1-year contract, so pretty much he's coming in. If he plays poorly, then the Kings won't re-sign him. If he plays well, then he's likely bolting somewhere else on a bigger contract or staying with the Kings, depending on how they evaluate his play. But either way, it's good for Rondo, that contract is, because, you know, he's getting a second chance. He's getting paid more than his market value is right now to prove himself again and get a bigger contract next year when the cap spikes. In terms of on-court stuff, I've sort of been off the Rondo train for a couple of years now. I mean, he shot 39% from the free throw line last year. He doesn't really seem to fit the pace and space mold of the NBA, especially the space part. He's a guy who always needs to have the ball in his hands to be effective, and in that sense, he's sort of like Chris Paul, who also needs to have the ball in his hands a lot, but not nearly as good as Chris Paul at just about anything, except for maybe finding nifty passing angles. Something I am interested in seeing is if he can regain his defensive form. The Kings actually have potential to be pretty dang good on defense. Ben McLemore is a question mark if he's the starter at the other off-guard spot. But, I mean, let's say they start DeMarcus Cousins, Rudy Gay, Caspi, Rondo, and Ben McLemore. If Rondo can regain his form, that's not a bad defensive starting unit because Boogie Cousins has gotten a lot better. And then if they do decide to go – another question I had, I'm just going to sort of segue into the next I sort of think the Kings, there's just a ton of question marks, is what kind of style will George Karl employ? It's like, what kind of lineups are they going to throw out there? He's always liked to play fast and small, but that was also in Denver where the altitude incentivizes that kind of play. So I'm very interested to see if Kufis gets enough run to validate the size of the contract he signed. Because, I mean, Kufis is a pretty good player. He's a starting quality player. You know, if someone asked me would I take Omer Asik or Kosta Kufis, I would waver back and forth. So, I mean, he's pretty good, but George, that doesn't necessarily fit George Karl's style pretty much since he became an NBA coach. So it'll be interesting to see if Kufis gets, you know, 12 minutes a game or if he gets 30 minutes a game. But, I mean, if Kufis is another good defensive player, solid defensive big. So if he gets a lot of run, then I think the Kings can definitely improve from their 27th mark in defensive efficiency last year.
Bringing it to Kosta Kufis a bit, I personally think that he was probably the best backup big man in the league last year, and it's just not a lot of people really pay a lot of attention to backup bigs. But bringing back to Rondo really quick is, I don't really understand what's in it for the Kings. If Rondo doesn't play well, then they're out $10 million. And if Rondo returns to form, he's not a restricted free agent, so they lose him. I just don't understand the reason for the signing for the Kings, because no matter what happens, they don't come out the winner.
Yeah, unless it actually helps them win more games. I mean, the Kings are sort of operating at a year by year basis, trying to make the playoffs this year, convince Boogie that it's the place to be, that they'll make moves that will help them tally more notches in the win column. So, I mean, I guess it's like you said, it is a 1 year rental, and I think they recognize that. They just, that's a franchise that's desperate to win now, which is a mentality, not a very smart mentality. I think most of us agree on that, but that's easier said on the outside looking in when you're not paying, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for the team, you know. But I agree, it's a little baffling from a basketball standpoint, from a team building standpoint.
Well, so then I guess my next question is, how do you think Marco Bellinelli is going to fit into this system? Is, you know, because he obviously provides a pretty good outside shot. Do you think he's going to crack the starting lineup? I know you didn't put him in with that list, but, you know, how many minutes do you think he's going to see? Is he going to help out, or is that going to be probably a bust move for them in the future as well?
Oh, I love Marco Bellinelli. He's one of those European guys that I think fits anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I've read a lot leading up to this article I'm about to produce, or blog post I'm about to produce for you guys.
Oh, awesome.
People saying that Bellinelli, they think he was just sort of a product of the Spurs. That is not true at all. When he was in Chicago, especially when Derrick Rose went down, I think it was the year after Derrick Rose went down, he was the primary offensive piece mm-hmm. on that Chicago team that played Brooklyn and that came back from three games to one in the first round against Brooklyn. Yeah, but Marco Bellinelli is legit. He does much more than just shoot spot up threes. He's getting a little bit older. You know, his knees are probably a little creakier than they were this time 3-4 years ago. But he can still handle the ball really well. He was their primary ball handler in Chicago,
right,
late game situations. You know, he can slice into the paint if people close out hard, which they do, because he, you know, has a pretty good shot. So I think he's a chameleon. I think he can fit in anywhere, and I think that's a really good signing. And I'm also an idiot for not including him in the starting lineup. I think he'll probably be there instead of Bellinelli.
How much do you think Willie Cauley-Stein's going to be seen on the court?
That's one of the big question marks. Is really good. That's another, like, what do you do with Kufis and all those minutes? It's just a wealthy front court. Yeah, I predicted Cauley-Stein to be a difference maker right away. I've been on that train on Twitter since, I don't know, the midway point of last college basketball season. I just don't see how a 7-foot-1 center who can guard positions 1 through 5 isn't useful in the NBA. I think he can actually. I hold out hope for Cousins and Calistan fitting on offense too. That's really where the big question mark is whether he can fit in on offense with another big. But I mean, if Blake and DeAndre could make it work over the course of, you know, they've obviously had multiple years to hone those skills and work together. I don't see why there can't be a fruitful relationship on both sides for Calistan and Cousins. Because Cousins is a really good passer. I think he averaged something like 4 assists last year, and his assist percentage was one of the, like, in the top 5 for bigs, people who are 6'10 or taller or something like that. So yeah, Boogie's a really good interior passer. Struggles when he gets double teamed, but we'll see. I'm very interested to see how Calistan fits in. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think Calistan can play alongside DMC personally because DMC is a good defender, not the best defender. I think Calistan will help make up for a lot of those liabilities, and you know, it'll allow DMC to operate more on offense. But switching gears a bit, we've talked about a lot of the better things the Kings have done, but let's be honest here. The Kings have been a dumpster fire the last few years. So let's get right into one of the most baffling trades I've ever seen. The Kings basically dumped Jason Thompson, Carl Landry. They gave up on Nick Stauskas, who was the 8 pick last year. They also threw in a first-round pick in 2018 and the right to swap the first-round picks in 16 and 17. And the Sixers gave up 2 players that they drafted 47th and 60th in 2015 and who are currently stashed overseas. I know they got the cap space to get Rondo, but what in the world were the Kings thinking here? Because I'm trying to find a positive here, and I can't. And that's not just my Sixers bias here.
Yeah, no, it was a head-scratcher from the beginning. And people were actually wondering, because it was made during the moratorium, the deal was. And people were wondering if the Kings, after all this, you know, public humiliation, if they would renege, not to take the words out of every basketball person's mouth from July. They had so many options of things they could do to open up cap space. They didn't have to give up what they did. Generally, when you offload players, it's players that have negative value or a bad contract. And I don't think either of those guys really had bad contracts. I mean, the Kings were just, they had too many guys in the front court and they wanted cap space. But yeah, it was head scratching. I'm interested to see if Philly improves enough. They probably won't this year. That pick swap probably won't matter this year, unless in the lottery something crazy happens with the Kings pick. But I'm interested to see going forward if that second pick swap plays into something. If that ends up coming to fruition, no idea what the Kings were thinking there. They could have just used a stretch provision to sign the guys they wanted to sign. They could have just waived those guys and used a stretch provision on them. And they would have had plenty of cap space to sign the guys they wanted to.
It's pretty funny. And what cracked me up is the Sixers with Liberty Ballers, the SB Nation website, had this big lottery party going into the draft. And I watched the footage of it. And obviously they're Philadelphia fans, so they boo everybody. Except they irrationally cheered for Vlade Divac when he represented the Kings. And after this trade, looking back, it's almost like they were prophets.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, some sort of foreboding, clairvoyant sense. I guess Philly just has that. I don't know.
It's crazy. But anyways, we've been talking. This is Griffin Connolly. He is our blog editor. Make sure you check out his blog at driveanddishpodcast.com. Follow him on Twitter at Griffin Connolly. Griffin, we'll check in next week, man.
All right, guys. Good to talk to you.
So thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Thank you to Greg Esposito and Griffin Connolly for joining us in this episode. And please leave a review on iTunes. It's the best way. And again, like Tim said earlier in the intro of the episode, it's not because we're narcissistic. It really helps us move up in the rankings, and we will read them on the show. So please leave us a review if you're so inclined.
And if you haven't had a chance yet, make sure if you're interested to join our Fantasy Basketball Podcast League, all you have to do is go over to our Facebook, like the Facebook, the very top post on the Facebook. You just got to leave your email, and then when we're ready to do the Fantasy Basketball League, we will go ahead and send out the invites for that. And if you happen to have an Android or Windows phone for some reason and you listen on any other podcasting service, Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn, Podbean, doesn't matter, leave us a review there. Let us know you did it, and we'll make sure to read it on the show.
Yes, and you can follow Kevin at Refuse to Lose on Twitter. You can follow the Drive and Dish podcast page at Drive and Dish NBA. You can follow Tim at Radio Tim NBA. And you can follow me at Justin C on the air.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole.
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da.
Hey, let's go while we're young.
All right, I think they get the point.